Blog Talk Radio.
It's going down for real.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, sit back, relax, and enjoy the 100th, that's right, 119th edition of BSA Poddam. It is me, per usual, Mike Bro, here with a man who's tougher than a $2 steak, Mr. Kevin Carter. Your resolve with the Pikes has been nothing short of outstanding, sir.
How are you doing? I have to ask, do you practice that, or after these months of layoff, were you still able to do that from memory?
I can 100% confirm. 100% confirm. And while I do embellish on some things, I am not embellishing on this. That was 100% off the top of my head, Kevin. I actually really enjoy doing this when I get time, and I really do need more time for myself because, you know, Devin might be important as well. And I was just about to tell you right before the show started, I was excited, man. I was like, man, I have more time, do more podcasts. Been home for my first week off of work, and I'm like, what in the fuck? I have no time. I told my wife when she got home last night, I said, I'm fucking exhausted. I mean, geez, these little ones, I love them to death, but boy, are they freaking crazy. But no, that's off the top of my head, sir. It's all here.
Impressive. Very impressive. I'm glad we were able to finally force you or kind of guilt you into having this podcast. Maybe somebody else will call in and join us.
You know, unfortunately, I don't have the Lonely Island It's Okay in a three-way ready, but I will get that ready again. I was actually looking through all the old archives, and I'm not sure how many people want it, but I've been in the process this morning of actually saving all the old episodes. About 50 through 79 I have. Everything else was uploaded to Blog Talk, and I just new computer, so I kind of, you know, didn't re-download them. But I think I'm going to get everything and zip them if anyone wants them, Dropbox them. But
that should be a requirement for any new owner. You've got to, like, go back and listen
to all 119 episodes.
Yep.
I was kind of, and that's officially 119. Travis did name his Blog Talk, or he didn't name his Poddam. His are named a little bit differently. The one where JJ and Swain took over, Agent X, if you will.
So does this one have a new name?
There's a name definitely. No, this is just a BSA Poddam. This is the flagship, Kevin. This is what people come to listen to. Everything else is just gravy on, you know, the gravy train, if you will. This is the BSA Poddam.
Am I allowed to be on this one?
Man.
That was really just Travis and you.
You've been on this one the last three times, so yeah, you're good, man. But
dang.
119 episodes. I was looking at the thing. Most of them are 45 minutes. Some are 30. Some are 15. I just closed it. It's over 200 plus hours. We have over 15,000 archived listens. Over 5,000 regular listens.
You spent over 200 hours
of my life
on this, of your life,
just
reporting how many hours in press releases, in uploads, in roster baiting have you probably put into this? 10,000? Have you hit that tipping point, that Malcolm Gladwell tipping point of 10,000 hours? Finally win a championship?
I don't think I've hit the tipping point yet. I actually wasn't aware who Malcolm Gladwell was until very recently when I heard him on the BS Report podcast. I actually enjoyed him a lot. It actually made me seek out some of his things. But hold on. I don't think I've hit that point yet, but I do find it funny, man, because I went back to when I was looking through everything, and I was like, Jesus Christ. We started the first podcast was September 28, 2011. It's been literally 3.5 years of having podcasts. About the last year, I went back and looked. There was only 5 or 6 podcasts in the last year. So that means in the past 2 years prior, we basically kicked out 110 podcasts, which is freaking insane. I mean, there's 1 week literally where me and Travis, I found it, 2012, where me and Travis literally have a podcast 6 out of 7 days. Like, it was just like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. You know what I mean? I mean, It's a lot of fun, man. I absolutely love doing it. I do need to make more time because it was part of the passion that I think a lot of BSA owners kind of fed off of early on. But before we get to the LaLonde contract and the second baseman whose name I can't remember pronounce out loud, that you signed, as well as you losing Goodship and Jordan basically sticking out his tongue saying, neener, neener, neener. We had a lot go on, man. I mean, this, I think, was – you guys have pressured me and pressured other people about podcasts before, but I think this year it was like, holy fuck, we need a podcast 10 times more than ever before. I mean, the trades that went down, Hendersonville basically completely rebuilding himself, Dookie Shoes, I want to call him Mr. Shoes. Mr. Shoes completely gutting his team, then signing a guy's $192 million deal, which a lot of people I think were more jealous of than upset because there was a lot of negativity on that one. I mean, I want to go through a couple of the names, Kevin's about 10, 15 names I have. January 1st, 2022 retirees, a lot of these guys with us since the first year. I mean, we have the biggest resigning, LaBelle, the Baffin Twins resigned. Travis trades for all these elite young starters and resigns them all for ridiculously cheap. We'll get to that. I mean, for the offseason, the biggest trades I have kind of breaking down a little bit. Number one just says Hendersonville, fuck you, Onslaught, Henby returns. Anything can happen. But Travis basically, you know, let's get to that first because that's what people are definitely not going to want to hear first. Let's get to Travis completely rebuilding his team. I mean, he grabbed Martel. He grabbed Eggman from Chicago. He grabbed Hit Squad Perez, who was most notably tied to Aguilar. I mean, shit, I was going Hit Squad Perez, who was completely, you know, tagged with Jaime Guzman in that St. Louis trade. I'm not trying to make this a Hensville podcast, but I think, you know, me and Travis were very prominent in the early years in trading, both of which of us have made trades, but not nearly as much as we have in the future. In the past, look at it like this. Mendez was his number one last year. He is now listed as his number six man in his rotation. He has Aguilar 1, Perez 2, Martel 3, Emin 4, Pinella 5, Mendez 6. I mean, yeah. Scott Hill's in the bullpen. I mean, Vaca's so, gone. Galindo's at the end pen. It's just I've just never seen a team completely 100% trade for 4 ace. I mean, okay, people say I have a lot of starter pitching. I've always had a lot of starter pitching, but I've never traded for 4 fucking legitimate 25, 26 year old under aces. Aguilar being 27 in one offseason. I mean, holy crap.
Trav reminds me kind of the Yankees under Steinbrenner, where just during the 90s, success after success after success, for the first time doesn't make the playoffs last year. And how does he react by going out and getting everybody? I mean, he paid top dollar for Aguilar, $30 million a year. Made very clear that not making the playoffs was not acceptable in the Aceville organization.
Right. Of course.
Why have prospects if not to trade them?
Hence what I used to say from day one. I mean, while I've always loved my prospects, they've always been
Trav has kind of become the opposite of the 76ers who want nothing but draft picks. And Colin and I actually got a talk earlier this week, and we were saying, you know, like as much as we like trading and as much as we like the DSA resembling MLB, oh my goodness, would it be awful if we could trade draft picks? Teams would just be ruined for life.
Well, here's what happened. For those of you who don't know, when we started the league, every team had a $75 million budget. Every team, and I'm going over this again, Kevin and I know we've talked about it, but I'm going over it because we do have a lot of new GMs since we've really hit the podcast hard. We all had a $75 million budget. We were allowed to trade draft picks. We all had the same, the same loyalty, everything. Some teams that went up, some teams that went down. Where you see the discrepancies now are my team, you know, currently with the largest budget, you know, whatever. But, I mean, that has a lot to do, I think, with me adding seats over the years when people have just added CP. The first 6 or 7 years, I don't think I added PP.
Yeah. Well, I would argue that the largest reason you see discrepancies now is turnover.
In some regards, but I just focus back on the draft pick thing. That lasted one season, and Gray shut it down. Hendersonville was built on Travis trading his draft pick the first two seasons. before anything really happened, and getting all these younger players, people were like, well, I didn't want to, and to Travis's credit, real quick, to Travis's credit, he was doing something that no one else was doing to begin with. Yes, sweetheart, everyone was basically, not you, Kevin, son. Well, you too, but Travis did something that a lot of different GMs didn't do. We had a $75 million budget, and I'm not sure if Travis, I've never actually officially asked him or if it just happened. I'll get into why Gray lacks the salary cap to begin with. But he traded all his draft picks, Kevin, for older guys making a lot of money expiring to get younger guys making money. Now, we went from 3 years, I think the first year, I'm not sure, but really the first year was 7 years, then we kicked it down to 3 years, 5 years, in terms of 2 years and 3 years of Harvey, I believe. I could be wrong. It could have been five to begin with. But Travis traded all his picks the first season. He got Art Ellis as a 24-year-old flamethrower. He got, I don't know, something ahead, but he got Gonzalez. He got so many young quality players. For people, you know, in fairness, this is the first year of the league. You want to set your destination. What do? You go young. You rebuild. Travis was like, fuck it. I'll take all the old veterans, cash in on some titles now, and he did. I mean, then he was able to trade those veterans down the line for, you know, the super tippy top guys. For a couple other players to help build his organization. Traded for Manny Kaprivis in 2011, where Terrence literally emailed I believe it was Terrence, he was in 2011, literally emailed the entire league. Manny Kaprivis is 22 years old, making $12 million, and not a single team in the league could afford him. We relaxed the salary cap because the salary cap, the arbitration numbers, we're pushing every team in the league past the $75 million.
I remember Jaime Torres, 1 year in arbitration, made $24 million.
Yeah, it was nuts. And I mean that was even after the fact, Kevin. The RB was bad in terms of prices, but I'm talking about $24 million of a $75 million cap. That's what that would have been. So that was lax. So Travis literally traded for a guy who nobody in the league could afford. He got in for nothing. Like, fucking nothing. It was a giveaway of Copper Visa. Now, he wasn't as fully developed as he is now. He was still 4 out of 5 stars. I mean, he wasn't the Cobra we all know and love. But, I mean, he got in for free because he had money. Hell, in 2011, I gutted my entire team at the deadline because I ended up winning my division. I was up, like, 17 games heading into August. I won by 3 games. My entire starting pitching rotation got hurt. 4 guys. My entire rotation was hurt. I was starting middle relievers from AAA in the playoffs. It was stupid. But
well,
I was at a point, too.
Let's get a little bit more to the future.
Current? Okay.
Yeah,
but
present day.
I'm just saying that 75, like, I traded all that. I got all my money open. That's how I got bold in 2012 once the cap was released. Once the cap was released, not only was I under the $75 million at 40, but all the salaries got bumped up. So I was fortunate to have all this extra money to work with that the other teams didn't have. So I'm just saying, as you pointed out with Colin and the draft pick, probably a wise move by Gray. It literally lasted one season. Norm, who was on Quebec, who turned into Cleveland down the road, he reaped all the benefits of all Travis's players, but this was in the inaugural draft. And the inaugural draft, as we all know, far better and more superior players. Because you need to have players for 15 years while your draft picks develop. Now, as you said, let's get to the future. I do want to take one more look at the past and run by some names that have played prominent roles in our league real quick, Kevin. Who just retired. Some not as important as others, but all of which who have had moments in this league. Francisco Garcia, Leon Foster, Riley Cassidy, Sammy Sagar, Rob Sharp, Art Ellis, who I just mentioned, Tommy Hunt, Jose Burrito. Burrito, not burrito. Lorenzo Rodriguez, Vicente Morales, Carlos Perez, Luke Ball. I mean, these are all Eddie Miller. These are all guys who have played, you know, Espan. I could have been something, but never was anything. Gutierrez, Roberto Miranda, Marcos Mania, who bounced around for a couple times between Baffin and Greenville. I mean, Diego Castillo, who was listed as starting pitcher, but was always a middle reliever. I don't get that one. I mean, shit, dude. We had Victor Ayala, Adrian O'Day. I mean, these are some big names that were the backbone and fundamental, you know, pieces in our league. Tommy Hunt was almost, was like near like top prospects when we first started. So I did want to mention that. I know a lot of people don't know these names, but there are a lot of people who do know these names, and I'm one of them, and, you know, it is what it is. There was just a lot of moves. Not moves,
now,
just a lot
of
people retiring.
Out of those, who are the guys, maybe Sam
Sagar? Well, Sammy
Sagar's
number one, clearly.
Get through. Hall of Fame.
Sagar's probably the only Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Matt Foster,
he leads for, because I was talking to Colin, and I don't think he was familiar with Sam Sagar. That's how new some of these owners are, because I mentioned
him. That was a
him.
Good get, by the way. I mean, that was a good get, by the way. You've had a good track record of bringing people into the league. I really like Colin. He looks like Colin Hanks on his photo, so it just makes me giggle every time I use him. I'm sure it's just because it's a really tiny photo, but he reminds me just enough of Colin Hanks when I look at his photo really tiny. But I just get really excited talking to him.
Yeah, so we've had a good run, and it all starts, not trying to give him too much credit, but with Vista. Jordan brought in Bill. Bill brought in me. I brought in Jeff. And then when the spot opened, brought in Colin. And I think Colin's looking at maybe previewing a little bit too much here, but I think the new Reno owner that Josh is going to be announcing at the end of the week or next week is actually somebody Colin's bringing.
Which is exciting. You guys are like a Bill Belichick coaching tree at this point. It's fucking awesome.
Almost. That's a good point.
It's just like, hey, Jordan. It's like, really? Jordan's like the backbone of like, what, six, like, what? I can't do that. I was about to say, what's the percentage of the six
and what I really
he brought
like
in
is none of the guys he's brought in or have conned down the tree have turned over. Knock on wood.
No, for sure. As Josh pointed out about realignment and a couple of, I don't know if it was about realignment, but in a thread about something, it's like, it's kind of hard not to, like, when they're talking about subtracting teams, it's like, dude, we've got 21 of the same, 22, 23, 21, 21, 20, 24, whatever, the same GMs for, like, you know, since 2012, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, we do have turnover, but it's the same fucking team. It's not, you know, crazy turnover. So we spent 15 minutes. Excuse me, I stuttered. This is why we need a podcast, man, because I want to fucking sit here and talk to you for half an hour about old bullshit. But let's get to the new stuff, because like you said, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, well,
Colin.
Let's start. Here's a question I've been wanting to ask you, and it kind of fits with two new owners, both Colin and Dookie Shoes, and
Dookie.
You have some older hats in Toronto and. Jeff and Austin, but if you had to handicap that division right now, is that not the most competitive division? Like, I could see any one of those teams falling within
the
five
South
games
is.
Of each other from top to bottom.
I think the South, well, with my league bias, let's go ahead and throw out
Birmingham, New Orleans are good, but they're not going to come close to Hendersonville. Hendersonville, like maybe
Orlando
are close. Top to bottom, any single one of the Central teams could win.
I don't know, man. I mean, I don't think Jeff necessarily has taken much of a step forward as he could have. And that's not necessarily his fault, but rather in free agency what became available to you. I mean, I believe I saw him signing a couple of catchers, I believe one with Warren Goyer, and the other one whose name I forget, he signed Pavano. I actually had the favoring bid on Pavano when I saw he became the favoring bid on Pavano, and I don't know, the one said, back the fuck off Pavano, which he did not, he signed him.
I mean, what Jeff told me is he thought he could be a World Series team had it not been for Lalonde.
Let's get something straight for a second. Jeff took my advice to release his entire team, or Jeff would have been in financial disarray for another 2 years. So, I'm giving myself credit there. No, I mean, I don't think Jeff's close to a World Series team. I think Jeff is smoking crack. I think Greenville is going to, and Jeff knows I fucking love the guy, but I just don't see it. I mean, you look at everyone else in that league, you got the powerhouse of Jersey. I mean, Jersey, St. Louis, and Greenville, let's just go. Why Josh isn't this opponent for the three wild card would be on me. That's just my personal opinion. Those teams are the three best teams in that conference regardless. Vista,
yeah.
I thought Vista overachieved last year. Not that his team wasn't good. Jordan had a lot of very good players last year. He really did. But when Colbus Heumann is beating Greenville twice, I mean, beating St. Louis twice, who's the number two or three offense in the league, I mean, you're fucking getting lucky. Like, I understand that he picked them in a good part. Like, Jordan, for what he gets out of what he has, Jordan is probably the best in the league about getting what he gets out of who he gets it out of. His Rule 5 drafting continues to impress and amaze me. I'm literally now in the offseason checking what date my game is because I don't want Jordan to take my guys I think he might take. Like, he just seems to draft guys just fabulously in the Rule 5 draft.
Jordan
has a great track record.
He also benefited, to be honest, from three out of the four worst teams in the Continental League were in the West this year.
No, for sure he did, but that still doesn't – and you can say that, and I have been screaming that from the mountaintop on the this isn't as good train. But then he beat St. Louis, who was clearly the second-best team in the league last year.
This is the second playoff that the St. Louis Browns have made. In both times, they've been knocked out by arguably weaker teams. Seattle beat them 2 years ago, and Vista this year.
Not arguably weaker teams. It's just the fact of the matter, they are far weaker teams. And I'm not putting down you or putting down Jordan. They're just looking at Billy's roster and what he's accumulated is absolutely amazing in the short time he's been here.
Go ahead. He's not going to make the playoffs this year. I don't see any way. He had no money going into the free agency, and Jersey has leapt far ahead of them, in my opinion, with some of their signings.
I don't know. I mean, I think Jersey and Greenville probably both get in, but I'm not going to be surprised if St. Louis gets in. Like, that's not going to surprise me. He still has Clemente for another 2 years, is it? I thought the Clemente signing was bad last year. Clemente wasn't bad last year. I didn't like the signing for his team because I thought he was very deep. Like, you sign Clemente and then have to move Beanpole Gonzalez. Like,
yep.
That's like trickle effect. I mean, I'm not sure because he's your most valuable, attractive asset. And he is a valuable asset. He has two more years on his deal and a four-year extension going up from 6, 7, 8, 9. That is a very, very nice contract on a very, very nice player.
You know, Bill ends up winning, making the playoffs and winning the World Series, it will be because Miguel Encarnacion, who has both sucked for both of us, will finally decide to turn it on now that you've traded him to St. Louis. Five-star potential, never batted above 220. He's finally going to turn it on.
Here's the thing, though. His mustache is going to play in St. Louis. It didn't play in Los Angeles or Seattle. That's the thing.
Not only does he have a mustache, he has the Michael Ono, Antoine Ono, soul patch mustache combination.
Here's the thing, too. I'll be frank with you. When I traded for Zach Frank in the offseason, I was trying to get him last year, and me and Billy actually agreed on two different trades and pulled back two different times. I've always liked Zach Frank. I don't think he's a superstar, but I think he's a quality player. The fact that I was able to get him for Miguel Encarnacion's potential and another, I mean, I had 4.5-star prospects. I think that's a great deal for me, but it really speaks to the type of debt issue St. Louis has, I think. St. Louis, I mean, I don't know, man, that Clemente and Yokoyama deal, that's like $40 million.
Yep.
I mean, he's raised his team from 80 to about $110 million budget now, I think. He's like probably top 10. So he's right there in terms of the top money getters in the league. There are some teams, you know, who are a little bit higher or further past him, then, you know, there'll always be someone ahead of you, I guess. But
So here's interesting. If you take issue with Clemente making $18 million this year and Yokoyama making $15 million, eating up a lot of salary, and then I think you took issue with Jordan, how much salary was being eaten up by 2-3 players, how can you possibly support Dookie Shoes move?
I support Dookie Shoes' move because I hope, for the love of Christ, it's good for him and good for the league. That's the kind of I'm hoping it works out for the league kind of deal. I don't necessarily know if it's going to work out. Look, here's my thing. Long Haul Lopez is a 15 prospect on my scout. He is 3 out of 5 stars. Two and a half out of five. He will more than likely develop. He is 23. You can add PP to him. he's going to be Regan where light in theory, or pick a left-handed equivalent. My thing is, Springfield has had a lot of injury problems last year. I mean, you're paying him $19.2 million for 10 seasons. Okay?
Yep.
10 seasons. That's a long fucking time. That's about, I don't know, what, do the fucking math for me, man. What, 20%?
With no team options.
20,
with no player options.
No team options. So that's probably 20% of his 20% of his salary. We were talking, I was going to go fucking balls deep on the guy and tell the Montanus thing. I was talking to Jordan, I was like, man, yeah. I was talking to Jordan, I ended up just saying, you know what, too bad, you know, I mean, too bad you want to move Montanus. I said, oh, I'd move Montanus. Really? 1 year, $18.5 million, I have Salazar at 17 next year off of Tommy John? Okay. I'm not going to go pay this other guy $100 million now. My biggest concern with the deal is, well, like, we don't show player injury ratings. Like, if his injury history would have shown as fragile or wrecked, hold on real quick.
Yep.
Hey, guys.
Well, I'll
guys.
Talk for a while then. I mean, my biggest concern, one, the injury, but two, like, that was so far beyond what anybody else was paying. I think people were saying that they were going to go big, meant 7 years, 2 years, team options at $14 million per. So he went 3 more years, 5 more years guaranteed at $6 million per year. So that's, six times five, $30 million more than he needed to pay. But the biggest thing is,
you guys
hear
Kevin
stutter
for a second doing math, right? You guys heard Kevin pause for a second doing math.
this coming from the guy who was asking how to get 20%. So my other concern is you can find better pitchers than him in the draft, in the first round. Anthony Rijo, who I picked up 29th pick in round one, he's a better pitcher right now. I would take him any day over Jose Lopez.
Here's the thing, though.
He's 21,
Jose Lopez
has more PP, and he's free right now. That's the crazy thing is he's free right now. I can develop him for several more years. He could have done the same.
Call me crazy, bro. I'm letting Lopez sit in the minor leagues next year for $40 million the next 2 years. He's not pitching for me in the BSA. Had I signed him,
he would have been in double A with Lopez or with Hill, with Rijo and Hill in my double A. And then next year,
and
bring them all
just,
up.
And it's just an added cost to your franchise. You're making the investment. Look at, not the shit on his shoes here, if you will, but I said that twice online. No one laughed at it, so hoping you're going to bite. But here's the thing. Wheeler, like, okay, like, he got a nice package for me. He got you know, 2 5-star Valentin, a 3.5 5-star Rodriguez. He got a nice package for Hunter, okay? Hunter's was the fourth guy in the league.
No,
when
I thought
he told
was
me
making
that he
great
was available,
moves before this.
No, I agree. Like, but I'm saying if you have a problem with him being able to compete, I don't understand because he was able to compete. He had injuries last year. He needed to sign some guys last year. He was a little money-strung. Okay. But Wheeler, Hunter, both locked for 4 years, combined make less money than Lopez.
Yep.
I don't get it. You take the money that you save off those two. I mean, I'm just saying, like, combined, they're making $4 million less than he's making annually as a prospect. Which is fine, because if all those prospects hit, and if Lopez turns into the number one guy, like Wheeler was, which I don't think he'll be Wheeler. I don't think it'll be Wheeler. I think Wheeler's amazing. But if all those guys say all his moves work and all his chips play, then you know what? We're going to be like, that was a good move. And I think everyone can see his ideas, but fuck if it's not a big-ass gamble to make when you just joined the league.
Yep.
I think everyone in the league is more skeptical for that franchise. We're like, fuck, he just ruined that franchise. I think everyone was more bummed because everyone's like, we know what you're doing, but fuck. Like, if it doesn't work, man, you just screwed over that team. And I think that's more of it. Like I said, I was talking to Josh about it. I was like, damn, that's $4 million less than $4 million less combined for two top seven players at their on the offensive and pitching side in the league. So it is what it is. I mean, Dookie, shoot, I really, really hope it works out for the guy and for the league. I mean, Salazar is listed as a number 11 pitcher. He's making $17 million. Obviously, that's the high end for players. I think Lopez is the top five players in the league now, paid fiscally. It's just, I don't know, man. I don't hate the move because I get what he's doing. I don't hate the move in terms of what he's doing. I don't like it because of how much it's going to cost him. And I just hope it works out.
If he stays with it, I don't think anybody has an issue with it if he stays with it.
Because then it's
so
like
here's
you
next question.
Yourself for 10 years.
If that's the biggest move of the offseason, what's the second biggest? What are the top five biggest things, either trades?
Okay, well,
or...
number one, I had of Travis just going crazy.
Okay.
Just, I think we all agree Travis was just like, didn't make the playoffs for the first time ever, didn't win the division for the first time ever. Travis is, you know what, people are going to talk crap because me and Travis talk not as much. We, you know, he's been really, really fucking busy. But for Travis to come back and whip out the dick and say, this is how big it is, like, this is what I'm going to do, basically, I like that. I would have said that for anybody. I like it more because it's Travis and he's my good friend, but I like it. I would have liked it if anyone did that move. A Dookie, you know, to a lesser extent, number two, because he went crazy. I think me trading for Hunter, you know, kind of moving my chips in a little bit and, you know, trading Montanez 1 year, $18.5 million, not the best. I mean, a lot of fucking money. Unfortunately, Salazar's out for the year. I mean, people aren't talking about Salazar being out for the year because, A, no one gives a shit. Two, I have other good players. However, I'm a little bummed because if Salazar doesn't go out for the year, he's making $17 million. I just paid $18.5 million on Montanez. I didn't want to pay. But I don't
what
want
is,
to tie myself
what is
to
your,
my future.
What's your payroll? What's your payroll right now?
I think my payroll is like 105. So it's high, but without that $18.5 million, I'm at like $80 million. So I'm saying without having to pay Montanez, and this includes Hunter's $9 million. So with Hunter, not including Montanez, I'm like at $84 million, and I'm like probably 10th or 11th for team payroll. But because Salazar hurt, I had to spend that $18 million on a player, and I'd rather spend it on Montez's expiring contract, even if he isn't what he was, than tie my future cap up. So I mean, I may have been able to get someone better, but you know me, no matter how much my payroll is, I'm always up for the extension, I'm always up for the clearing of the cap year, like rolling over. So I mean, I think the Salazar injury for me, coupled with the Montanez deal, I don't think I'm being selfish here. With the 100 as well, I think without that injury last year, I have so much more money to spend on free agents this year. Not that my team isn't going to perform well this year. I expect them to perform well because I think Larry did kind of decline a little bit with trading of Lindsey and Edney Garcia. So I think my team will be okay in the division. I think if, as long as I don't get hurt, I'll be okay. But that was a huge deal for me, man, losing Salazar for the year, not just for the playoffs. Not only in game one, pitching 0.1 innings in the playoff, throwing my entire pin in that series. I'm not saying that's why I lost. But is Salazar my best player? Yes. I mean, anyone has a better chance of the best player in the playoffs. So I would say that's number three. I would say LA's kind of, you know, Salazar injury and a couple moves. And maybe I'm being a little, you know, whatever. I think number four would be the lack of Boston doing much aside. I mean, he did trade for Ronnie Brown for St. Louis. I haven't looked at his financial situation, but he did trade for him. I think
Boston's
coupled with
Boston's
that.
Scary, very quiet, not a lot of big, brash moves, but finds
doesn't
good deals,
to.
Like when he got Brian Smith.
Right, no, he's very – but Dave is very like, I'll make a deal if he's at the price I wanted at, and I won't pay a dime more.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll talk, and you know my negotiations go. I'm like, yeah, fuck it, who cares? It's an online video. You can have it. I don't care. But he'll do what he wants
to
do and nothing
myself,
else.
I like to think of myself as like a quiet, but I've discovered like as soon as I have money, it's burning a hole in my pocket. I think this is the first year I've had free agent money in 2 years, and I've already spent $30 million.
I think the Lalonde contract was a great contract because it's something that I would have done. And again, that's being – and hold on. We'll get to that in a second. But actually, I did have a surprise. Bosma being extremely quiet in the league after winning his World Series and being basically told he couldn't take over Reno.
Yep.
I mean, call it for what you call it as. Bosma was very quiet. He said he wanted Reno. I know, you know, everything out in the open, I know Travis has had that conversation with Josh. Josh doesn't remember it, and that's fine. He doesn't remember the conversation.
What conversation?
I know for a fact. Travis had been talking to Gray about taking over Reno a couple times. Because his team was getting – I mean, he just won all his titles. So then Bosma wanted Reno. Travis is like, what the fuck? I asked about this 3 seasons ago with all my PP, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. Me and Josh talked about it a couple times. I love Josh, and I trust Josh. He's one of the most honest people I know in terms of internet, you know, internet honesty. I don't think Josh did anything wrong. I think that he didn't remember or the conversation didn't happen and Travis thought it did. I know personally that I can speak from the side of Travis, knowing that me and Travis had this conversation multiple times. So I was under the assumption that it was a conversation that has been had.
So what's the deal?
Is
Bosma actually moving over to Reno?
Neither one of them are being allowed to have Reno.
I think that's... I mean, I understand where they're coming from, but I also...
Right, but it's...
There are, 20 other people in this league that have never won a title, and it kind of rubs people, I think, the wrong way when this game is too easy. We've won a title. We want to take on a new challenge. So it's kind of interesting.
Not even with Bosma, it doesn't bother me. I mean, again, because I'm going to say Travis won 5 titles in 8 seasons. At that point, if Travis is like, I want to change it up, I get it. Whatever, you won 5 in 8 years. But stay with your team. He made a lot of moves. He had said before the decision was made that he would give up his team with all the trades he made, and I think Josh was like, he just made all these trades. I'm not giving someone else a team. Because whoever gets Hendersonville or Greenville, and my biggest, Josh, me and Josh talking about it, my biggest concern was you can't just give those teams to anybody because it's not fair, because they're elite franchises, historic franchises, and teams people would kill for, not necessarily, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's just,
but I mean, they gave JJ a team that immediately won the World Series, and he was able to blow it up and make it terrible, so.
True. But in fairness, that team was the world's worst World Series team in the history of BSA by a wide margin. Travis lost in 7 games, didn't export, and was in Israel and had injured players. Like, I'm not saying that's why he lost. Tommy Hunt, by the way, retiree, World Series champion. Munoz as well. But, no, I'm not saying that that's what happened, but I'm just joking with JJ. it can't happen. So that's for me, Bosma being quiet, you know, they being quiet, Orlando fucking saving his ass with a sign-in trade for Capovisa, which was great. That's another story. New Orleans grabbing a whole bunch of guys for the 4 and 5. Now, I do have a couple minutes, and Kevin, if God willing, we need to before the start of the season starts, really go through all this stuff. We've really just kind of bullshitted, which I think this conversation has been good, but I have like a list of 25 things, and we got into 2 of them. Which is what usually happens.
What amazes me is how much talent is still left. And like I was going through, there are great guys still available, and their demands are dropping like crazy. I'm going to be gone for the next 3 exports, so I'm really curious to see what happens. And it's kind of going to be nice because it's going to keep me from spending money until the very end. So I'm curious.
Right. No, Ryan, you should get guys right before free agency times really cheap. Now, I do want to talk to you. We got about 8 minutes left. I was like, fucking, don't you all I can do. My kids have literally went from the bedroom to the restroom now, jumping on my bed, but I'm walking, so I think we're okay. I guess my son just turned 5, my daughter's 2.5, so I don't know what's going on, but I'm surprised that I've been allowed to talk for 37 minutes. Like they're literally jumping on the bed. But okay, here we go. Here's what I want to talk to you about. The eternal logic of team options. Okay. It's a touchy subject because I've been known as implicitly sensitive about this. And I was one of the big proponents when we had Carol Gate. And for those of you who don't know, I'm not saying this negatively. Me and Carol talk, which surprisingly, talk all the time publicly in ABL and have never had a single fucking issue. And our football league never had a single fucking issue. And BSA didn't work out. Don't know why. I talk to Carol. I email Carol occasionally. I don't mind the guy. Okay? I really don't. But when Carol went out and found all the illegal contracts, I think it was like 50 of them, right? For those of you who don't know, there was a lot of bad contracts. I've said for years, and I've tried to defend myself for years, the $2 million, $2 million, $2 million, $6 million contracts have never bothered me. It's $2 million. We had a lot of contracts in middle relievers. Jose Gomez calling you out as well, Travis, not that you did anything wrong, but another one, Tommy Smith, with a contract for $4 million, $4 million, $4 million. $4 million.
Oh, I was
definitely guilty
of those.
Right, but what I'm saying is, to me, I guess less wasn't as bad, but I guess they're illegal. Now we're getting tons of other phone contracts. We have buyouts. 3 people have messed up the buyouts, whatever, it's going to happen. I already told Josh, just add 30% to my fucking deal because I don't want to have to deal with the math. I'm jokingly. But, I mean, now we have people going team option, player option. I love our league's evolution of... Fuck you, this is what's going to happen. Like, I just love it. And
I mean,
I've done it before.
That's human nature.
Leagues. Right, but it's not like here's the thing. What I've used team extensions for myself recently is I use team extensions with team options to extend players early. Cameron got a $3 million, $3 million, $4.5 million, $7.5 million contract with two team options. What did I do? I extended him at the two-year team option point, locked in his last years, and got him on a $3 million deal for the next 4 years. Like, in my experience, it adds money to the deal he's seeing because he's locking in that non-guaranteed money. So that's why I like using options. Me, personally, I don't think options are a bad thing. I don't think options are a negative thing. I don't even mind, now granted, the crazy options. I think Billy did one, too, where it was like $20 million, $21 million, $35, $35 or something for Estrada. Now, if Estrada got paid $40 million from St. Louis, played about 60 games, and that was it in 2 years. So yeah. Team options are there to hurt you, but how do you feel about team options, man? I mean, do they really bug you? Because I think everyone always, for whatever fucking reason, I'm a glass half full guy. And unless it comes to my team, then I'm cautiously optimistic and usually more negative than I am not when it comes to winning. But how do you feel about options? I don't personally think people do things negatively or to be mean or to skirt the rules. I think people do what they need to do to try to win in most games. I just don't understand why people take it so seriously.
So my feeling is my feeling is we're all playing by the same rule, right? We've identified areas where the rule needs to be changed, and I think each time I've voted for the rule changes, even if I had been violating them, I think they're a step
in
the right direction.
Kevin.
No, so they weren't. They would be under violation if the rule passed, right? So even where I'm like, okay, I'm doing something, and then somebody says, like, don't do that, and then we'll pass a new rule so that you can't do it, I vote for that rule. Like, I'm not going to stand in the way. If you found something that you don't think is fair, I'll vote for it. And to be honest,
right.
I'm going to lose a lot of money in future years because I'm still offering team options, and I've got to pay the buyout. Some of them I'll accept, a lot of them I won't. And it's worth it for me as I look for the window when I want to win. So, like, I've used team options and I've used structure. Next year, my salary, starting salary next year, is going to be $53 million. And I've got Lalonde, I've got Haynes, I've got Martinez, and the whole rest of my team locked up for $52 million. That gives me $20 million to go buy another great player. So,
I understand, but here's the other side of it. What I think team options should be illegal in general. Now, to use my team as an example, I'm fortunate to have a fairly large budget, the highest in the league, yada, 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 whatever. However, with people not wanting to do buyouts now, I'm seeing a lot more guaranteed contracts. So wouldn't, in essence, that be me? Wouldn't that put me as a team with a higher budget in a better position?
Oh, absolutely.
Now teams aren't allowed to get out of contracts, take less money for themselves, and I can sit back and just coach guys and pay guys off. Like, you have a fairly, for as many games as you lost over the last few years, you have a fairly healthy budget, Kevin, comparatively to some of the other teams. And I just wonder how much actually adding in these rules are going to hurt the league as well, because you're guaranteeing yours at this point. And I really think, and you know, people are so witch-hunting in DSA, and this isn't trying to be negative. People, for whatever fucking reason, gravitate towards the negative, generally, in this league especially. But I don't think the team options necessarily having buyout are necessarily a good thing. I really, really don't, because even with the extension prices at the back end, you're still having to pay your extension money is completely tied up. You have that 2 week period after the season to negotiate. That's it. You cannot extend early. That money is bankrolled for the following year. I thought that was punishment enough. I voted for the buyout, as you pointed out, because more people wanted it. So I'm like, fuck it, whatever. It's only going to, I feel like it's only going to benefit me.
No,
even
if
people release these guys,
the right
then they're taking out their cash on hand. It is. I mean, it is what it is.
And we'll figure out something that also does something about player options. The league evolves.
Well, we're going to go to player options, and then we're going to have to investing options, and now I'm seeing that. So it's ever-evolving, man. I like how the league ever-evolves. I'm not going to lie, I like how people are finding, I mean, I've only signed one free agent, but I like how people are finding new ways to do things. I think it's fun, and that's what makes PSA fun.
Nice. All right, so we're entering what, February in-game? March?
Yeah, for example, Bertrand wanted $21 million a year, now he wants $7 million. So.
Yep. Jaime Torres is still out there, pretty cheap.